Thank you for joining us today for the Oakwood Baptist Church podcast. This episode was recorded at the Home Builder Sunday School class, which Pastor Jones teaches at Oakwood. The series is entitled, A Biblical View of Culture.
We've been looking at guiding through the culture, and so we're going to look at 1 Corinthians chapter 6 in just a minute. And we're going to talk about the subject of addiction today. And We had some technical difficulties. We've been recording these Sunday school lessons. We felt that they would be help people get them on the podcast or the website, but we ran into a little snag. So there's going to be about three of the lessons that, if you're following those, that didn't get recorded properly, and so there'll be a gap in that. But we think we got all that fixed. But 1 Corinthians chapter 6, look at verse 12. We're going to get a principle here and build upon it. It says in verse 12, 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12, all things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. That word expedient means beneficial. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. And so Paul is saying, hey, there's some things that I guess you could do, but they're not helpful for you. And I do not want to be under the power, the bondage of anything in my life. And he expounds on that a little bit. He starts talking about foods and different things, but that's just the principle. And so I do want to talk to you today about addictions. We're specifically talking about drugs and alcohol. I mean, we've already talked about the issue of some sexual situations. We had about three lessons in that, but we're specifically talking about drugs and alcohol today. So let's take a look at it, and I hope this will be a help and equip you a little bit. Heavenly Father, I do pray that you'd be with us today. Help us to learn from the Word and help us to build our lives upon it. And we'll thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. I think we're very well aware that many Americans are living empty lives. I think we as preachers and Christians need to be careful not to think that anybody who's lost is just absolutely miserable. But we do know this, that they're missing something. They're missing the most important thing. But many, many Americans really are living empty lives. Philip Cushman is an American psychologist, and he said this, "The empty self seeks the experience of being continually filled up by consuming goods, calories, experiences, politicians, romantic partners, and empathic therapists in an attempt to combat the growing alienation and fragmentation of its era. One of the wealthiest nations on earth is also one of the emptiest." I thought that was a powerful statement, that concluding sentence there. One of the wealthiest nations on earth is also one of the emptiest. You know, we have known for quite some time that many turn to drugs and alcohol to soothe their souls. And our culture is becoming more and more accepting of drugs and alcohol. In fact, we are seeing that influence in Christianity, where Christianity as a whole in the Western world is becoming more and more accepting of alcohol. And we're seeing that trickle down into our culture because our culture is more and more accepting of drugs now. I mean, they're well past alcohol. We're now legalizing and approving of marijuana, and drugs is just not as big of a deal. Well, how do we help our young people navigate through these cultural currents? That's what we've been talking about. So we've started these lessons with, here are some lies that are being told that we need to not believe, and then here's some practical steps. So let's start with those lies. Lie number one, drug and alcohol abuse aren't that big of a problem in our culture. All right, that's a lie. Drug and alcohol abuse aren't that big of a problem in our culture. Remember that. I'm exposing lies there. I mean, I can't believe that somebody would say that. I mean, you just need to open your eyes and look around you for a minute. Here are some statistics. And again, I know we give a lot of statistics in these particular lessons, but think about some of these statistics that I saw. 20,000 people per year are killed on highways because of alcohol. I mean, that's I think we're aware of that problem. One person every 20 minutes dies in an alcohol-related incident. 83% of fire fatalities are alcohol-related. 50 to 68% of all drownings are alcohol-related. 80% of suicides are alcohol related. And by the way, I don't say this carelessly, but I remember when I was in health class and we studied drugs and alcohol, you talked about stimulants and depressants. Do you remember that? And alcohol is a depressant. And it's interesting that we use alcohol in our culture as a means to drown our sorrows away. So think about it. We are using a depressant to help us when we are depressed. Now again, I'm not trying to be snarky about that. I'm just pointing that out. And you can see that 80% of suicides have some kind of alcohol relation to them. 40% of fatal industrial accidents are alcohol related. This says 86% of murders are alcohol related. 65% of child abuse problems are alcohol related. And 200,000 Americans die every year because of their own consumption or someone else's consumption of alcohol. Now again, I preface this all with saying I recognize that statistics can be manipulated and they can be shaded. I get all of that. But I always believe that statistics are an indicator of something, and you want to watch that a little bit. The point that I'm just simply trying to make is to say that it's not a big problem in our culture is a lie. It is. It is a big problem. And I know that I'm preaching to the choir and you would agree with that. But here's the thing. Reading all of these statistics and saying something like, 10,000 people died in alcohol-impaired driving crashes last year. If I said something like that to you, that isn't very personal. Okay, so if this is turned personal to you, that makes more of an impact. So if I said 10,000 people died in alcohol-related accidents last year, how about attend one of those funerals and see how that changes your perspective on things? Because being the spouse or the child of one of these incidents or accidents totally changes the dynamic. I remember specifically, these things had an impression on me. I remember when I was a freshman in high school, there was a kid who was a senior in high school, and he was a pretty popular guy. But what had happened before I got to high school, maybe the year before, he and a bunch of buddies had gotten drunk as high schoolers. They were driving around afterwards when they were drunk, and he was drunk in the back of this truck, pickup truck, and he fell out of the open bed pickup truck while they were driving down the road, and he was drunk. Well, he hit his head on the concrete while falling out, and it messed him up permanently for life. He had this huge scar on his head. His side of his body he couldn't control, and as a result, he was kind of a popular kid before, but he was really popular afterwards because people felt bad for him. And I remember I worked at a restaurant. I remember he came into the restaurant and he was all by himself, and he sat. It kind of had a countertop place where you could sit, and he was sitting there eating. And of course, he was impaired with one of his arms, and he was kind of slow at that point. And I remember he spilled his drink because he couldn't control his motor functions quite the same. And somebody ran over there to try and help him. And I remember he yelled at him, like, "Leave me alone, I got it." He was embarrassed. He was bothered. And I don't ever know what happened to him. But that affected me as a young man. That affected me. I remember seeing that and experiencing that. And thinking, I don't want that. I could go on. Remember Gary and Angie Moore that served here. Angie Moore has a sister. And I was their pastor. Not when this happened, but slightly after it happened. I was Angie's mom and dad's pastor and her pastor and her sister's pastor. But one of her older sisters was standing in her yard at about 5 in the afternoon when a drunk driver ran up in her yard and ran over her and killed her. You experience those things, it changes the way you view this stuff. My grandfather died when I was 6 years old. I hardly remember him at all. And why did he die? He lived a hard life of smoking and drinking and running around. I remember we had a police officer in my church in California. And he was one of the happiest guys I know. Always had a smile on his face, faithful to church. But he was a domestic violence detective in the city of Long Beach. And I asked him, I said, man, you deal with the worst of the worst. Like you see horrible things. How do you keep... And, you know, he had a perspective about it, and his faith was integral in all of that. And I won't get into all that, but I asked him one time, I said, how many of your cases of domestic violence and abuse are alcohol related? And he said, you throw drugs in there, probably 100%. I mean, some kind of connection. Matt may have some perspective on some of that as well. I'm just trying to tell you this morning that is a lie that our world wants to tell us, and I don't think any of us should buy it. Because I want to say this, I don't think alcohol and drugs have ever touched a community that it did not lower the moral tone of that community. You know, honestly, living here the last 5.5 years, it bothers me that since I've been here, you think of all the churches that have been here, they've passed legislation in our town allowing churches to get alcohol licenses for different events. I don't know how that happened in Anderson. I do not know. But I'm telling you, that kind of stuff lowers the moral tone of a community. It chills religion, and it undermines law. Everywhere it is, that's the way it goes. It has never touched a state that it did not multiply crime, destroy wealth, and increase the burden of taxation. You can mark that down. And so again, that's a cultural lie. Lie number two, legal drugs and alcohol are primarily used for recreational purposes. Even if you abuse them, you're only hurting yourself. That's a lie. I want you to pay attention sometimes, I know you're already aware of this, at alcohol advertisers. It always shows some slim, trim, sharp-dressed man, or it shows some scantily clad, seductive-looking woman, or it shows some kind of groups of beautiful people that are all smiling and laughing and having the time of their life. And friend, that's not an accurate representation of all that that includes. You see, our culture communicates that alcohol in all its forms is a harmless means to fun, pleasure, and enjoyment. That's why Miller says, enjoy the high life. Or Corona, you know, you got to just find your beach. You know, you look at all of the slogans and advertisements that they give. They're essentially trying to teach us through advertising, and advertising does work. These marketers are smart. They're good at what they do. I remember one time Molly was a little girl, and we were eating in a restaurant. We were traveling somewhere. I think it was on vacation. We were sitting in a restaurant, and it was one of these restaurants that has TVs everywhere, and that's not good for somebody like me that has ADHD. You know, my wife says, don't sit there. But we will have no conversation, you know, huh? But Molly was watching it, and it was an infomercial. I mean, she's like 5 or 6. There's an infomercial for some kind of like mop or something. And I remember she said to me, Dad, we need to get one of those. No, probably $19.99, and that's not all, right? But advertising does work. And essentially, these marketers and our culture are telling us that consuming alcohol, for the most part, is just harmless fun. And it's really indispensable for the good life. And that's a lie. That's a lie. And I already mentioned to you that kind of mentality is shifting to drugs as well. According to some statistics that I saw, 58% of Americans favor legal marijuana usage. The majority of Americans are now favoring marijuana usage. 28 states allow medical marijuana, and 8 states, according to it may be more by now, have legalized even recreational. Alaska, Colorado, Oregon, California, Maine, and somewhere else. So, I remember when Colorado first legalized it. I was traveling there to preach, and I was waiting for my bags, and literally a guy had a rolled joint. He had gotten off the plane, stuck the joint in his mouth, was standing at the carousel, grabbed his bag, walked outside and lit it. I mean, like, he was happy to be in Colorado, man. But again, the majority of America is now favoring this. And I'm we all know this has led to all kinds of problems. So let's spend some time on the third lie. The third lie is this, and I really want to include this because honestly, the book that we're basing this on, I found it to be an excellent book, and I recommend it. I would encourage people to read it. But it, not shockingly, but sadly disappointed me in a great way. Because when it got to the section on addiction, it comes in like a tornado and talks about how horrible alcohol is and how difficult drugs are. And then the remainder of the chapters tried to tell us why Christians can drink it in moderation. And I thought, well, buddy, you're talking out of both sides of your mouth. And it's always disappointing to me when I hear Christian people talk like this. In fact, we're teaching a curriculum in our Christian school. It's a new curriculum, so it's we're wading in the waters, and it's about understanding our culture like this. And we're watching some videos that are attached with it. And the guy in the video is telling in the video how God gave wine and you should enjoy it. And you know, you got to pause and go, all right, guys, let's listen to this. I don't agree with that, and we got to talk about it. And listen, you say, well, I don't want my kids hearing that. Listen, they're going to hear it from somebody somewhere. You cannot be ignorant of that argument. Well, didn't Jesus turn water into wine? Doesn't the Bible talk about the gladness of wine? What's that all about? Well, look, I don't have time to go into all of that, but I do want to just point some things out because I think it's a lie right here that the Bible is not opposed to alcohol consumption, that it's only opposed to drunkenness. I don't think that that's true. And I'm going to give you just kind of about a 10-minute deal on that, but I could spend a lot more time on that. And by the way, in high school chapel here, I'm preaching a series this entire school year called Wise Up, and I'm just trying to deal with some things from the book of Proverbs, and one of them is going to be Wise Up about alcohol. And I want to preach about that. But anyway, While most Christians agree that the idea that Christians are not to be drunk, we don't always agree with when that line is crossed. And to me, I think that is the single most important question in this argument. When do we cross from sobriety into drunkenness? That's my question. And, you know, anytime I've ever had a debate with somebody, I like to ask that question because they can't answer it. When do you cross the line from sobriety into drunkenness? Are you only drunk when you have a 0.08 blood alcohol level? Is that when you're drunk? That's when the government says that you're not able to drive a vehicle. You need to know that if you want to get your temporary driver's license. You got to know that, right? I've got one that's getting ready to take that quiz. And I remember, you have to pass that one, right? Was that just when we cross the line of drunkenness? Is it before that? You know, most people do not drink to be drunk. Not most people. But they drink in order to receive what is often called a buzz. So I wanted to look that up. You can look up, I'm sure you have to be careful about this, but you can look up slang words, you know. There are dictionaries out there, and onlineslangdictionary.com. And again, I'm telling you, you got to be careful because there's some doozy slang words out there. But it might be helpful if you hear your kids say something like, you don't want to look too old in front of them, so you get on your phone and look that one up. And like, all right, you know. But anyhow, onlineslangdictionary.com will define buzz. What is a buzz? Here's how it defines it. Again, these aren't Christian people defining this. These are, you know, slang experts defining this. This is what it says. A state of mild or moderate intoxication from drugs or alcohol. Okay? So what is intoxication? You can look that word up in Webster's or American Heritage. It just means you're under the influence. Okay, so here's my contention. The moment you take one drink of alcohol, you are under the influence to some extent. Paul said, I don't want to be brought under the power of any. That's what he said. So I have some serious questions then about this issue of alcohol. Okay, because I really love that even if, even if, and I think that's a huge if, because there's a lot of scripture we could go to. Paul says it's lawful, a Christian can do that. He says, not all things are expedient, they're not beneficial to me. So if we just take that extremely neutral position, here are some questions to try and determine to us if this is expedient, if this is beneficial for a Christian to consume any alcohol or to maintain abstinence. Okay, here's my first question. Is it necessary? Because again, he says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are expedient. All things are lawful, but all things don't edify. So I'm going to tell you, it's not necessary to drink alcohol. It's not. Like, have you ever been to one of those? You can make an argument whether you should drink Coca-Cola or not. I think you could go there too. But we ate at a restaurant the other night at our couples activity. You can pick hundreds of soda flavors. How many of you ever been to the World of Coke? Okay, you've been at the end there and you can drink. Some of those are nasty. I'll just tell you that right now, man. I mean, like, I drank some soda from Italy. I thought it was like drinking Alka-Seltzer or something. It was horrible. But anyhow, I can't imagine somebody be like, give me a bottle of that. But anyhow, there's so many things that you can drink. You don't have to drink alcohol. You don't. It's not necessary to have a good time. I mean, I've had a lot of fun in my life. I really, really have had a lot of fun in my life. And alcohol's never been a part of that. So, again, it's not necessary to drink alcohol. But let me tell you, if you're a Christian, let me tell you something that is necessary. To be holy. That is a necessity. All right, now here's my second question. Is it the best choice? Well, according to Proverbs 31, it says, it is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the judgment of any of the afflicted. You study the Bible, remember, priests and kings were not allowed to drink and consume alcohol. Why? Because it impairs your judgment. God said, I don't want people who are in leadership to touch that at all, because it impairs your judgment. So according to this passage, drinking alcohol perverts your judgment, it dulls your senses, and it causes you to make decisions you will regret. I promise you can talk to somebody who has not lived a dedicated Christian life, and some of the worst decisions they ever made had to do with alcohol. So again, is that the best choice? Because remember, discernment is not just choosing between good and bad. Many times it's choosing between what is good and what is best. All right? And then question three, is it potentially destructive? Again, I understand that we make decisions every day that involve risk. And that's one of the things that's bothered me about the last year and a half of our lives is, I'm not so sure I buy into the mantra safety first. There's a lot of things that we do that we balance the risk, the reward factor. Like, again, I went skydiving a couple years ago. Huge risk in that. Huge risk. But I've known a bunch of people that have done it. You're strapped to somebody else. You got a pair. Look, I mean, there's a risk reward factor. All right, so if we believe in safety first, we would never do something like that. And some of you are like, yeah, I'm never doing that, right? I get you. But I've told my children, especially the ones that are driving, the most dangerous thing you will ever do in your life is drive a car. I mean, it really is. Why? Because we do it so frequently, and now you add cell phones into the mix. I mean, you're always seeing somebody with their head down. I mean, like driving a car with their head down, you're like, Mindy said she saw somebody in Anderson drive through an intersection, taking a selfie of themselves, turned this way. I mean, just like crazy, dangerous, but you all drove to church here today, right? Anybody walk? Ride your bike? Skateboard? Have your wife pull you in a wagon? Anybody? No. We all drove, right? We take a risk reward. I get that. But even when we don't think think through the risks, what we do is we subconsciously compare the risks to the benefits. And that's what I've told my kids. Don't ever even try it. Because that's what bothered me about that video that I was telling you about, where a guy's getting them saying, well, God created wine and you should just enjoy it. I thought the arrogance of people who talk like that really bothered me, because what they're saying is there are people out there that can't control it, but I can control it. I think that's a lot of hubris. I look at my five children. How do you know where life is going to take you when you start dabbling in that stuff? It is not worth the risk. Not at all. And so I say, is it potentially destructive? Yes, it is. Massively destructive. So stay away from it. Question number four, will it offend other Christians? You know, the Bible talks about that. If we went to dinner together, anybody in this room went to dinner with me, and we were sitting down in a restaurant, and by the way, good old Cracker Barrel now is selling alcohol. So if we went out to Cracker Barrel together and we sat down and you ordered a sweet tea. Man, I was sitting in a Cracker Barrel with a preacher friend of mine and he ordered regular tea. And the guy wrote it down and then took my order and he came back and he said, like regular tea, did you mean like unsweetened tea? And the man said, yes, that's what I meant. He said, mister, I don't know where you're from, but around here that ain't regular. But anyhow, so you ordered sweet tea or whatever, and I ordered a beer. I would imagine that would raise your eyebrows. What? The pastor? A Christian? I mean, if your neighbors who all know that you're a Christian saw you take out your recyclables and sit them next to your dumpster and there's a bunch of beer bottles in it or wine bottles, I wonder how many of you go, I thought they were good church-going folks. Now, again, I know that the times they are a-changing, but I think it is a stumbling block to people. It still is. I mean, you've heard me say when we talk about the Lord's Supper, we're going to have that next Sunday. Listen, I don't understand churches that would use fermented alcohol. You pass a plate, you might have somebody just got saved and they're struggling with alcohol and you're, and the Holy Spirit's working on it and you're giving them a little cup, a little shot of it. I don't know, I don't get that. I do not want to be a stumbling block to any. Don't want to be an offense in any way. In fact, it's a funny story I'll tell you real fast. There was a couple, when I was pastoring in North Carolina, there was a guy in my church and he was a country guy. I'm talking like, I know people in this area think they're Southern. No. You should have been in North Carolina where I was. I mean, this was the farming, blue collar country people. And this guy, he is from Virginia. I mean, he's still chopping his own wood and he's like 90. I mean, this guy was backwoods country. And his wife got sick and they weren't in church for a little while. And I went by and visited them and I sat down with them. And I mean, these were godly, sweet people, but country. And I looked at her. Her name was Lucy. I said, Miss Lucy, I said, how you been feeling? She said, man, I had this cough. I can't get rid of it. And he looked at her and he grinned at me. He said, I told her how to get rid of that. And he mentioned, he said, you take a tablespoon. And he started listening to some alcohol, like strong drink alcohol. And I looked at him because these are godly, godly people. And I was like, I was trying not to laugh, you know. And he was like, you just go down there to ABC store and you go in there and you get this. And I mean, he listed it off and it was a certain brand and a certain whatever. And I was just trying not to laugh at him. And, you know, I was just kind of like, oh, okay. And then I looked at her and she went, it works. Now, again, we could get into Paul telling Timothy and there's a lot of biblical thing that we could talk about and we don't have time to. But my point is this. Is I'm not doubting that a tablespoon of whatever might cure your cough, but I would have a really, really hard time walking into a liquor store to get some of that and then hide it in my cabinet. My kids go, what's this? That's cough syrup. Put that away. You know, I mean, like, I would have a hard time with that, and I think you might too, but will it offend other Christians? And again, you could come over to my house and I say, hey, you just help yourself in there. And you open up a cabinet and see that back there and go, oh, you know, again, that's a great question to ask. And then the fifth final question is very similar to the other is, will it harm my testimony? Will it harm my testimony? Now, I got 5 minutes left. Let's get to the action steps. Action step number one is this. Open your eyes to the real threat that substance abuse is to your children. Let us not, remember what the Bible says, take heed lest you fall. So let us not get to the attitude of, that would never happen to my kids. I raised them right. Don't take that position. Take heed lest you fall. Listen, I've known some really godly, good Christian parents who did raise their children well, who their kids got ensnared in substance abuse, and it is a very heavy weight to that family. Or to those families. If you think drug and alcohol abuse cannot touch your family, you are wrong. I'm not saying it will. I'm saying it can. So open your eyes to the real threat that it is. Number two, this might seem silly to you, but I want you to hear me. Make family dinner an essential part of your routine. Make family dinner an essential part of your routine. Did you know that teenagers who had infrequent family dinners, meaning two or fewer per week, were more than twice as likely to use alcohol and drugs than kids who regularly ate dinner with their families 5 to 7 times per week? Listen, I'm in the teenage stage. I know kids are here, they're there, they're coming and going, their work schedules, all kinds of things. I get it. Molly's away at college. Matt's going to college. He's here. You just don't see him like you used to. But we still try to make that a priority. And it's not, and I think you understand that, it's not the mere act of eating. That's not it. It's the relational component of the dinner table. You talk about things. Sometimes you don't talk about much. Sometimes you talk about goofy stuff. But many times you're talking about serious things that have an influence. Do not neglect that. Number three, explain the why. Explain the why. You understand there's a progression when you're raising kids. You got little tiny kids. You don't necessarily tell them why. You just tell them what. And if they don't do it, you spank them. You tell them no, no. Okay? But as they get older, it changes. Your discipline is not always the same. And you can't just, as they get older, tell them the what all the time. You got to transition to where you're starting to tell them the why. And if you say, alcohol's bad, beer's bad, like we've all had that. I mean, if you've tried to teach your kids when they're little that smoking is bad, you're going to be embarrassed at some point because they're going to be 4 years old and seeing somebody smoke and they're going to go, there's a bad man, he's smoking. How many of your kids have ever done that to you? Because mine have done it to me before. All right? And that's because we taught them the what. But you got to get to the place where you're teaching them the why, and I think you know that. And it can't just be because I said so. Now, there is a time and a place for that, but talk to them about it. Number four, regularly host your kids' friends at home. You need to know who they're hanging out with. Because somebody said it aptly, show me your friends and I will show you your future. So get to know them. Number five, teach them from real life examples. And I don't want to create an atmosphere where I'm better than anybody. I just want to say, hey, look, guys, alcohol ruined this person. And look what it did to them. You don't want that. Well, I don't have time to tell you about it. I remember one time Matt had to get stitches in his head. An accident. You got kids and boys especially, you'll have that stuff. And we were sitting in the emergency room late at night and the town drunk, and I knew him. I dealt with him. He came in. He smelled like a dumpster. He's drunk out of his mind. He saw his Matt, little boy. You know, he's probably 6 or 7 years old. And, man, he took a liking to Matt, and he was all up in his face talking to him, talking crazy. And Matt, you know, little pastor's kid, church kid, he didn't know what in the world this guy was. Yeah. And I remember the deputy officer he was a member of my church, and he came and got that guy out of there. Pastor, I'm so sorry. I said, it's actually good. I'm glad he saw this guy. Because I could say to Matt, I'm telling you, don't ever try it. Don't ever taste it. Don't ever try it. Because I feel sorry for that man, but I do not want you to grow up and be like that. I'm not saying we're better than him, but I want you to see from real life that that's not what you want. The other day, I think I told you, lady, high as a kite, came running across Pyramid Dairy Road.
I mean, her pants were falling down. I've seen high people. She was out of her mind. Ran into the woods. And I had my kids with them. Guys, don't ever even try it. Don't ever mess with it. All right, I'll be quick. Confront your kids' problems quickly. And then number 7 is just simply this: get professional help if needed. Don't be too proud for those kind of things. All right, I hope that was a help to you. And I know it's serious, sobering stuff. But listen, the biggest thing is, let's take a biblical position and let's not buy the lies of our culture, especially in Christianity, that this is okay. It's not okay. Let's handle that properly, all right?